GM, everybody. Welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave, here solo dolo, and I'm here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And this time around, we just have an excellent episode with Rushi, the co-founder of Movement. He is truly a Chad, and I was really impressed. Honestly, like, as this interview went on more and more, I just got more impressed with them because, you know, I've seen different move chains. Like, you know, obviously there's Aptos and Sui. Movement came out with a big raise a few months ago, and I was like, oh, what's going on there? But I think in this episode really highlights the power of Movement. We get into all the different applications that are launching on Movement, and I think that's what will make Movement stand out from all these other chains is what's possible with the Move language and the applications that they're bringing on could actually go take over the internet economy in ways that we haven't thought of before. And probably my favorite part of this interview was he was doing this metaphor and comparison. Like, you know, we have all these different like upgrades to the modular stack, and like one part, if you compare it to a car, like one part is like the body of the car, one part is, you know, the transmission, this and that. But we never really upgraded the engine. It's like there's EVM, which is like the engine and whatnot, but Movement and like the Movement VM is like the upgrade to the language. Really impressed by this episode. Definitely bullish on him, but I'll let him speak for himself. But before we get into it, make sure you go ahead and hit that bell button. You go and subscribe. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Give us a like. Make sure to follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, Telegram, at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDay22. And let's get the flywheel spinning. Everyone, G Move. This is a special flywheel edition in person, in the flesh. We have Rishi, the founder of Movement. Rishi, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love in person interviews.
Yeah,
I saw the Bear Chain DeFi Dave interview. I was like, I gotta hop on this thing.
Yeah. So the story behind this is he literally messaged me 2 days ago, and I'm like, oh, bet. Like, I've been meaning to have you on for a minute. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do something next week. We'll figure it out. But then I had an interview cancel. And I'm like, hey, do you want to actually come on like Saturday? And you're like, sure. And I even said 7:30. And I wasn't sure. I was like, is that going to be too late?
Yeah.
You're like, bet. But we made it work. Happened to be rolling through the city at the same time. And
yeah.
Now we're both here.
Yeah, everyone's getting ready for ETC. I didn't even know that you're in the city. And it worked out. So
yeah. So, like, what are you doing, like, to get ready for ETC? Like, what are your thoughts on it? Like, what are your plans? Like, what do you think about ETC overall?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's a testnet. July is a big month for us.
Oh, nice.
So, we have an incentivized testnet coming in July. It's been a year and a half of building, and finally, the feature complete. So, excited to have, like, the first high-throughput roll-up on Ethereum. And, yeah, next month, I don't know when it's going live, but probably mid-July, you'll be able to use the Movement testnet. Try all the cool apps. There's a bunch of exciting apps that we've been working on for the last 6 months that are excited to use. One of them is Bracket, which is a fully on-chain sports prediction market, as well as some great DeFi apps that I'm happy to get into.
And yeah, we'll get into that. But before we do...
You're good.
Oh, we're good? Yeah. Before we get into all of that, let's get a bit into your background. How did you get into building?
Yep.
And how did you discover Move?
Yeah, so for those that aren't familiar, Movement started off November of 2022. I started my career more in engineering, engineering by trade, more into like cybersecurity and distributed systems when I started off.
You were like working when you were 14, right?
Yeah, I started working coding when I was 14, just for like freelance engineering. My first gig was at United Health Group, which is the biggest health insurance company in the world. And for them, I was working on their cloud infrastructure. Like, how do you bring their on-prem databases? They literally had two big data centers in Minnesota. And I was like, guys, like, if a natural disaster happens, you just lost millions of patients' data. So I was part of their migration to AWS. I got my career in distributed systems, databases. And then I actually got bit by the Cosmos bubble when I first got into crypto.
What time is this around? What year is this?
Well, it's around 4 years ago.
Okay. I feel like everybody got Cosmos bubble 4 years ago. I remember Paradigm dropped that one article the Cosmos thesis.
Yeah.
And everybody started like, oh, there's actually something going on here. And then you saw like Osmosis, Barachain and everything. Yeah. And there was like a lot of excitement around Cosmos.
Yeah, I mean, my career started with Osmosis. Not at Osmosis, but Sunny was a close family friend, and I heard about the Cosmos thesis. But I was still in like high school at the time. I didn't really know what was going on. And then started reading into it, started running Rust and Solidity, just like a DeFi engineer when I started off. But that's what got me into the crypto bubble.
Nice, nice. And so then you were in college, and how'd you find Move? You just like read an article one day about, oh, like Facebook, they're starting their own chain. Like, what's going on here?
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. There's like this New York Times article that said, I think it said like Facebook is unveiling a new blockchain program.
Yeah.
And for me, this was exciting because there was like 5 users on Cosmos. There was like 100 users on Ethereum. And here's an opportunity for like a billion plus users on Facebook to come to crypto. And like you can send money from New York to Thailand using the Facebook app, fully decentralized, not any banks, nothing like that. And that got me excited. I dropped what I was working on at the time, learned Move from the Move book, which is the first thing they put out.
The Move book.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I found fascinating about Facebook is they actually came out with that in 2019.
Yeah.
In the last bear market, a few bear markets ago. And like back then, it was like stone cold dead.
Yeah.
And like the fact that Facebook was making a move into stablecoins and building something from the ground up.
Yeah.
Like that was so validating to crypto as a space. And remember getting all those partners, like all the different, what was it, 30 different partners like Visa, Stripe, whatnot. Yeah. But yeah, it was a really big deal. And then, it ended up not happening because of regulatory reasons.
Yeah, it was like supposed to change the world. It was supposed to be like, how do you make social and financial incentives in one platform? It was like the super app that we all wanted. Unfortunately, U.S. regulation was like, nah, you can't do that.
A big thing had to do with, I think, the election of 2016 and how Facebook handled that and the how it was received and whatnot. And then they're like, oh, you're going to like go into our money? Not like, there's no way. And the U.S. government was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
And so that didn't happen. And it's interesting to see how it like split into like Aptos and Sui.
Yeah. I mean, even like back in the 2016, like touching on like that, there was not much in crypto to what it was today, like in terms of political awareness.
Not at all.
It was like Bitcoin's used for scammers and hackers and terrorists. That's pretty much it. Right. And today, like politicians have a pretty big understanding of what crypto is at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if Facebook tried again today, it'd be a lot easier. But back then there was no shot.
There's no, absolutely no shot. And so, okay, you read the article, you're in the Move book, you're teaching yourself Move, and then how'd you get started building Move? It didn't first start out as an L2, you were actually working with Avalanche, right?
Yeah, so November 2022, there was 3 places to do Rust-based VM. For those, not to get too technical, but there's Rust-based bindings, traditionally you have the EVM, which you can put on other consensus mechanisms, but nobody had done anything similar to what we're thinking, which is bring a completely new VM to underlying consensus. So we had 3 options at the time. We had Avalanche, Cosmos, and Polkadot. I won't comment on Polkadot. So it was like Avalanche and Cosmos back then.
Mm-hmm.
And Avalanche, he was very supportive. They reached out to us, was one of our early investors. And me and Cooper dropped out of college in Nashville, Tennessee at Vanderbilt. Moldy World War II dorm. This is like about $10 in my bank account, like broke college kid, and Cooper's broke. And we started working on this thing.
You don't really hear of that many startups coming out of Vanderbilt, honestly.
You don't.
Usually out of Stanford or out of UCLA or something, but like what's the scene like at Vanderbilt? There's really not much of a scene.
I mean, it's like a top school, I'd say, but it's more of like a consulting business small school.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the probably worst CS departments, honestly.
It can't be that bad if they found you.
Yeah. I mean, they don't like really help much. Yeah. It was more so just like me and Cooper were friends, and like we actually met in New York City at FTU NYC, and I was building a DEX and Aptos, and he was building a yield aggregator. So we were early Move DeFi builders. I was engineering and he was founding a startup. And then November 2022, we're like, yo, we can potentially do something cool here. So started off as like a Move L1 and Avalanche.
Yeah.
So bring Snowmate consensus, which is the main subnet consensus, and put a Move VM on top of that. And thesis was back then still what it is today. Bring the Move language, what people call dead, and people were like, oh, it's not really major feature technology, and bring it to the EVM. And we started there. And then as time went on, we honestly struggled a lot. Like it was like, everyone's like, it was post FTX. We started a week after FTX. People were like, crypto's
perfect dead. Time to start.
Perfect start to start a crypto startup as a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So most investors were like, A, got burned by FTX. B, you weren't deploying, or C, didn't want to take a bet on a 20-year-old idiot. Which, to be fair, I wouldn't either at the time.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of people lost a lot of money. But yeah, we started building, had some scrappy early investors that now are pretty happy. But yeah, I think we started grinding 6 months. It was like hundreds of no's. We were questioning if it even made sense. Everyone said EVM had won. This is when Sana's at like $7, $8.
I remember that in December, January.
Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, Sana's going zero. It's over. Ethereum won. And today, I would say maybe it's opposite.
Yeah, today it's a complete 180 from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those skeptical, you know, it's like, we have EVM, which is like quite dominant. SVM, which is gaining steam, of course. Like, why do we need another VM?
Yep. I mean, we look, take a step back. Facebook looked at the current state of infrastructure. They saw the EVM and it's like, okay, this is hot garbage. Mm-hmm. If you ask any Ethereum core researchers or like who are around the time, I think Nick Dotson talks about this a lot. They were like, the EVM wasn't designed to scale. It was like a patchwork solution for Ethereum at the time. And it made it way to what it is today, but it wasn't designed to scale. It was designed for literally 10 users. Whereas SVM and these other Rust-based VMs are designed for high throughput. So then it comes down to SVM and why do you need another high throughput VM? And second, like obviously both are very fast, high throughput parallelization, but Move really focuses on security. I mean, you're big in DeFi, we talk about security hacks.
Yeah, and, oh, of course.
Like anyone watching this podcast, you've probably been hacked, rugged, scammed on your favorite blue chip DeFi protocols.
Yeah, those battle scars.
This year, Curve went down, KyberSwap went down, two of the bigger blue chip protocols. The DAO was one of the bigger attacks back in the day. If you look at the scope of all these attacks, it's oftentimes the same issue. So Curve, blue chip DeFi protocol, they'll have like one of their devs accidentally support a wrong push. One line of code is a bad arithmetic error.
Wasn't that the Viper hack though? Yeah, so it wasn't Viper. Curve, it was like the level under is in the language.
The language itself was broken.
Yeah. And you know the story behind the time. It was basically there's a switch in the Viper teams around the time.
Yep.
And then when they were switching, like this thing just got missed.
Yep.
And then the hack happened. But I think it goes to show like that the hackers were getting like more sophisticated and they were like going deeper and deeper into the code. And the fact that they're going deeper and they found it like in the Viper level.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a good sign in the sense that, okay, like things are getting like more secure on the EVM and they have to go down to the level. So it's like a lower level to find out.
I'd actually argue it's a bearish signal because these instruments that we think that are so bulletproof that everyone trusts actually are at risk of being hacked. The number is like 92% of every EVM protocol, including blue chip, is at risk of being hacked besides Lido, basically.
Besides, why not Lido?
Lido, I think, is just like has enough financial capital as well as like there's not as many smart contracts movement compared to like Uniswap, Curve, some of these more dynamic protocols.
Yeah, no, I'm more saying that like, okay, like these hacks, we might as well, DeFi's in beta. We might as well get all these hacks out of the way now. And like the more, like the fact they had to go deeper is like, there's probably less vulnerabilities at the easier levels. And like eventually, like what my thinking is like, the EVM will be better.
Yep.
But at the same time, I hear you out, like, I heard this quote before, like the EVM is string like spaghetti.
Yeah.
Like we have to like, it's a very like danger. It's like a very roundabout way to like get security, a very like test and prod way to get security.
The way I explain it is like the EVM was good for what we needed to do. But the bigger issue is human error, right? Like, for example, like a random dev didn't mean to put arithmetic error in the recent like Blastables hack, whatever, Munchables hack on Blast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's like a developer who isn't as experienced made an accident mistake and then overnight lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what Move introduces is this concept of formal verification, which means when I execute a smart contract or I deploy a smart contract, it checks your safety before executing. So say, for example, I'm a dev in the EVM. If I have one line of code that's really like wrong, there's integer overflow, I messed up one line, there's nothing stopping it from getting compiled. So if you put bad code to the internet, I can see like, hey, he messed up, let me get in there.
Okay.
With Move, you're not allowed to publish that code because it checks the resource type memory safety. You can think of it like a firewall in Web2 for your PC, right? If you have a firewall on your Mac, if you have like a Trojan virus coming in and be like, hey, you have a virus coming in, to shut it down, right? Move is the firewall for crypto.
Move is the firewall for crypto. Okay, got it. And with Move, there's like different types of Move though. So there's like Aptos Move, there's Sweet Move. From what I understand, Sweet Move is trying to go for like higher throughput.
Yep.
Aptos is more trying to go for like security minded. Can you go into the differences between the two?
Yep.
And like, I guess, like, why can't we just have, like, EVM? Everything, EVM's the same. Like, you can deploy on every EVM, but that seems like it's just making things more complicated.
So I'm going to, like, I disagree that they shouldn't have been to move language. That's the biggest mistake possible.
Yeah.
So when I was building, like, I was one of the first 10 move builders. It was very frustrating to have Aptos and SweetMove completely two different languages, by the way. It's like React and Vue and JavaScript. So like if you build Aptos app, you can't deploy it in Sweet, which was a big mistake for starting off. Made a lot of confusion for developers. Obviously, both sides didn't like each other. So if you picked one side, you were like North Korea and South Korea-ing it. I won't comment on the situation, but like, it was quite difficult. Yeah. And I think something that we're working on is more unifying the tribes. But to get more experience, like Aptos is more in line with the Facebook DM style. So DM had this language called Move. Aptos took it directly while Sui spent another 6 months iterating. I would say Sui is more similar to Solana in the semantics and how consensus works. Well, Aptos has the security and the Move prover. So you can argue that Sui has better speed compilations, while Aptos Move is more secure, but they're the same bytecode. So movement, we support both Aptos and Sui Move in one stop while having even compatibility.
How is that possible? How can you support it all?
Yeah, so we still use Move VM under the hood, but the same bytecode from Aptos Move and Sui Move. Mm-hmm. They're different, semantics, but they boil down to the same thing. Mm-hmm. So since you built RPC translation mechanism for Sui Move, and that boils it down to Move bytecodes that the VM can understand.
And then you have like a compiler for EVM.
Yeah, so we have Fractal, which is the EVM interpreter. So if you're Uniswap, you can deploy the EVM smart contracts. If you're an Aptos app, you deploy directly. If you're a Sui app, you can deploy and compile the bytecode down.
Uniting all the tribes here.
We are like Avatar Last Airbender for like all the different tribes.
Yeah, and I love the name Move, so it goes so well with Avatar, that whole vibe. But yeah, like let's get, so now we're at the point, like what is movement?
Yeah.
What do you got now?
Yeah, so movement is the first Move EVM, layer 2 on Ethereum. The way to think about this is a parallelized EVM mixed with Move on top of Ethereum. Question is, why layer 2? Why don't they do layer 1? Why not be a bearer chain? And I think like where we looked at it was there's already two Move layer 1s. The biggest issue with next-gen and high-throughput or alternative programming languages is how do you get liquidity to the ecosystem? When you talk to a lot of LPs and when they looked at Aptos, Sui, and even Solana back then, you have to buy APT, buy Sui, buy Sol, which is a pretty fluctuating price. For a lot of LPs, it's a scary asset to buy. It goes down 90% in the bearer. Solana's a lot better today, obviously, much more stable, but back then it wasn't. In Aptos, we aren't today. So the thesis was, how do you use ETH as a stable asset, as a liquid asset that everyone trusts, buys, everyone here uses ETH, and bring it to this layer two?
Yeah.
So you can use the benefits of Move without leaving Ethereum.
Yeah, I'd say one of each strongest points is it being a store of value that everyone uses.
Yep.
Like the fact that, you know, it established itself on mainnet, and that's kind of just permeated throughout all these different rollups and L1s and whatnot. Yep. And it's such a strong network effect.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, the currency of DeFi, currency of NFTs.
Yep.
Granted, like now you have like Bitcoin coming up again, but go ahead.
I would say the value of Ethereum layer 2s isn't like what sequencer they use or what like fraud proofs they use. Like Blast doesn't really have any of that, right?
Yeah.
But the main value prop is ETH.
It's literally ETH. ETH. Like ETH's inherent value as an asset.
And it's like a very trusted asset. Same with Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
Bitcoin is a little bit less programmable, so that's we're seeing a lot of changes now, but it's really difficult to work with. ETH is not only really programmable, really easy to move around, but very, very secure today.
Yeah, have you ever tried to work with Bitcoin?
We actually have a team called Nexio that is announcing their raise next month.
Nice.
It's a Move VM on Bitcoin.
Move VM on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So you're using our stack. They're using our stack. They're a pretty competent team. So bring all the Bitcoin liquidity to a parallelized environment so you can have like high throughput markets on Bitcoin.
Can this exist with like the current like Bitcoin stack now? Will there have to be any BIPs for this?
I'm not a Bitcoin guy, so I can probably answer you. But from the way I understand it is they built essentially a compiler for the Rust-based VM to Bitcoin.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we talk a lot about Facebook and how Facebook is really what grabbed you over to building on Move and, you know, started movement. Now you see Tom.
Yeah.
And when I look at Ton, I see this is what Facebook could have been. I tweeted this.
Yes.
Ton is what Facebook could have been. Like, they have the distribution, they have all these users, and they're bringing crypto, like, directly to all of them.
Yep.
Like, what are your thoughts on the Ton ecosystem? And do you think if you, like, started today and saw Ton, you would be building on Ton instead?
I'm very bullish Ton ecosystem. I think that makes a lot of sense. Ton is one of the biggest used apps, like Iran, some many areas of the country where like it's a prime method of communication.
Yeah.
And now it's an opportunity to bring crypto wallets to all these users.
It's the app with crypto.
It's literally app with crypto.
Yeah.
But I think the one downside, it's like very clunky to work with. If you ever tried to coding the Ton VM,
I've heard,
it's like literally the worst thing possible. So like, I think if I could go back, I would like, I still wouldn't build on Ton. I think like our thesis, like high throughput liquidity to Ethereum. We still need ETH, but there's a world where you can still have like Ton based apps. So we have a few existing projects that raise capital, and they're essentially bringing like Ton mobile gaming. Like you'll see like a move, like click your button, or like a messaging game in the Ton app, still living on movement chain. I think we're seeing a few. There's one team doing this where you can use Ton as settlement layer, so have access to Ton distribution and put different VMs. So you can put EVM on Ton, and you can put Solidity on Ton. And you see the other way around, where you have like a Ton VM on top of Ethereum. Where you
Ton L2 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's like two ways to go, right? Because if you have Ton VM, yes, the programming sucks, but you can get directly into the app. So if you're Ton VM on Ethereum, you can still be on the Ton Telegram app, but use Ethereum liquidity. The other way is around is like if you use EVM on Ton, you're still Ton aligned. But you have better programming.
Yeah, it's all trade-offs, honestly, like which way we're going to go. But it's interesting seeing, like, get so much excitement now, how it'll develop in the future. I want, like, I think about, you know, like, who's, like, what's going to be, like, the next big chain. Because last cycle, like, Solana has established itself as, like, clearing, like, it's cleared its path. It's, like, it's, you know, it's really developed its own lane. And now, like, I feel like Ton is, like, a pretty good candidate to be, like, the fourth one to come out, like, this cycle to, like, be that because they have the distribution.
They have the users.
They have the users.
The question is, like, how beneficial are these users? Because a lot of these users are, like, tappy games. Whereas what Facebook literally had was, like, this Facebook's the biggest social app. They have all these partnerships lined up. You have a very corporate angle. Ton is, like, it's still bullish to a lot of users, but the question is how value added are these users?
Yeah, of course. Now, I want to get into your go-to-market plan. I want to hear, like, what's your plan to reach out to users? What's your plan to reach out to developers? Like, how are you building the movement ecosystem?
So I think from a messaging point of view, one of the biggest narratives that we have unique edge is, like, we want to be secure DeFi hub on Ethereum. Everyone in crypto is sick and tired of getting hacked. Like, being a developer, it's pretty difficult to even write EVM. You have to pay $100,000 to auditors. You can't really ship products fast. My biggest concern in crypto today is the velocity of production is very slow. Zuckerberg was able to build, like, Facebook in his dorm room in 3 weeks and get prototyping. That same app can't be built in crypto because if I build an app in 3 weeks and deploy, I'm getting hacked. If I get, like, users, like, look at Stars Arena. It was, like, a SocialFi and Avalanche. Built in 2 weeks, basically. They deployed it, got hacked, lost everything. So we want to build an environment where A, funds, users, and people feel comfortable deploying ETH, deploying EVM assets and not getting hacked. We want to be the place for no rugs. Well, rugs are possible still, but like these silly hacks that destroy Ethereum shouldn't be possible on us. And second thing is we want to be a place for user experience. We have high throughput. We have a security angle. We also have the ability for developers to go 0 to 1 overnight. You can deploy that social network app and not get hacked. So I think that's the general messaging we're seeing. And then in terms of go-to-market, I think obviously you had the two major move L1s. I think there was some go-to-market struggles there where it wasn't very Web3 native, which I think is complimentary because we are the DGens. We are the ones on-chain. We kind of know what it takes to build a community. And learning from a lot of like people in the industry, I think we're able to combine the benefits of Facebook's very corporate technology and bring it to Web3 in a native way. And from tech stack point of view, it's even compatible, so we can support all the great EVM apps that have been in the past, and we can usher in kind of new high throughput apps as well.
Yeah, and you said earlier in the interview you have an incentivized testnet. You have all these applications that are building. Can you give more details about the incentivized testnet?
I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. I'd say like you have a testnet, you have some great apps like Meridian is kind of like our flagship DeFi hub. We have Echelon, which is lending markets.
Yeah, let's get into all these different applications. So Marine, Echelon, like, let's go in through them, like, one by one.
Yeah.
So I feel like people are familiar with movement, but they're not familiar with, like, all right, like, who's, like, building on movement?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of these announcements coming next month with the fundraisers, but I can kind of probably jumpstart it. Meridian is a really great team. It's built by Tala Adam, and you guys probably know him. They're building, obviously, the DEX and stablecoin that they had on Aptos, but also really focused on how do you bring move staking, so taking a ticker, staking it. They have LRT they're rolling out as well, so how do you restake ETH? So that's live, and they raised a pretty big round, so I'm excited to announce that next month. There's Echelon, which is a lending market, so they're going to be actually the best place for you to deploy ETH on Ethereum and not get hacked. So if you want to get yield from a lending market like Aave right now, or like Curve right now, there's a risk of deploying the capital because EVM. On Echelon, you can have pretty good yields without needing to worry about it basically hacked, have pretty low fees, etc. So those are two like DeFi things I would say. Bracket is like why I keep talking about it. It's like fully on-chain, like Polymark essentially, but really focused on the sports ecosystem. So
it's called Bracket?
Yeah, Bracket, B-R-K-E-T.
Oh, Bracket, okay.
So today was the Cricket World Cup. Like you can go on right now, vote for your like India versus South Africa, do it fully on chain, have some great payouts. They have like degen mode, so you can go with leverage.
You can leverage on the betting market?
Yeah.
I think that's what prediction markets are missing.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge unlock for prediction markets because there's only so much liquidity. I've like worked with prediction markets before, like a long time ago. There's only like so much liquidity. There's not like you have your buys and asks.
Yeah.
If you like really want like outsourced returns from prediction market, like if you really want like a lot of liquidity there, you need to have make it like leverage. But
It's leverage sports books.
It's crazy.
It's just pretty cool.
That's so decent.
And they also have like, you know, like March Madness, they have like bracket style. It's called bracket because you can essentially create your own bracket for any competitions and put that on chain. So if you have like March Madness, which is coming up right next year, you can have a fully on-chain competition, which brings in a lot of transparency.
What do they use as the oracles?
I believe they built their own oracle.
Okay.
But we have Pit supported for our oracle, but I think they have a fully randomized oracle and it's open source.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty great team that we're excited about. And stuff like that's like I just like, what are these applications? Like everyone's bringing all these L2s, I'm sure we're going to get into. Mm-hmm. Like what are these applications that your chain can only produce? And when we think about that, it comes down to a few things, right? You have really high throughput virtual machine. You have like Solana-like user experience on Ethereum. Mm-hmm. So you can bring in ETH. If you want to bet with ETH, you can do that on our chain and have Solana's UX. So think Solana meme coin trading on Ethereum, that experience, which is pretty exciting. And security thing is a whole other landscape because for the first time, these people can go to LPs and be like, you can deploy your capital for sure. Have fully audited, fully formally verified, and here's the results for that. So that's been pretty successful.
Yeah.
And I think like what's interesting about our stack is I recognize that a lot of people want to launch chains. Like to be honest, like if I'm building an app, my valuation doubles, triples if I can launch my own chain. This concept of app chains for better or worse exists.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is a stack where teams can launch their customized rollups. If you want your customized app chain for high throughput block space, you can do that. You can use the OP stack, use Arbitrum Orbit, use Polygon CDK, use whatever DA layer, and then use our VM. So like this whole concept of modularity, I'll take a step back. People focus on like roll frameworks. You have the OP stack, you have CDK, you have like Orbit, you have like 10 different DA layers for better or worse.
So many, man. Yeah.
I don't know if we need all of them.
Yeah.
But there's 10 layers. There's 10 different layers. There's like 10 roll frameworks, but no one's executing on the execution layer. They're just saying build whatever, but keep the EVM. When in reality, the EVM is a bottleneck. Having like a pimped out car. You have the nicest tiers, nicest chassis, it's Lamborghini, and putting like a 1994 engine in it and saying like, why doesn't the chain work?
That's a great metaphor, honestly. Yeah.
So what we're doing is we're focusing on the engine.
Focusing on the engine.
We're not a DA company, we're not a roll framework company. We simply give the VM that we have to other folks, and we have a shared sequencer to essentially have a liquidity transfer. So for example, if you're Base, you can stay on the OP stack, use our VM, and then connect to our shared sequencer. So you can interop between our chain, which is the movement L2, as well as other layer 2s.
And you mentioned you were talking to a Bitcoin layer 2. Like, are there other teams you're talking to that are building this?
So Ironet's one of the big ones we're about to announce.
Ironet. Sick.
So they have fully, one of the issues they ran on Solana is obviously the transactions weren't going through, and they had a lot of transactions because of a distributed GPU network. So they can put that fully on their customized chain. Don't have to worry about clogging the network. So we're excited about that one. We have Link, which is a gaming L2. They have 300 mini games that from a ton of apps to even PC games and stuff. So they're launching that. Like a bunch of other ones.
Are there any consumer apps?
Yeah, so we have Henry, which is also a team that just raised. It's like, you use Honey, right? Whenever you purchase.
Yeah, Honey.
So it's like consumer cashback app. I've seen like 10 of these, right? And I was like, what's the benefit of another one of these? I think what's interesting is that, A, they have their ecosystem. It's because they have a customized chain that like consumer teams building on top of them. So for example, if I have a marketplace, I'm selling shoes, I can build my own essential portal on top of this chain. And they have 20 partnerships with like Crocs and some of these big retailers. So when I go on the Crocs website, I can buy a pair of Crocs and I'll earn Henry points. Which will qualify you for future airdrops. And finally, there's this big one that I'm really, really excited for is Up Network. They're announcing a movement phone essentially next week. So by the time it's probably out. Essentially, like Solana Mobile is really big, right? You had the ability for a mobile first Android experience. We're going to be rolling that out essentially in the next few weeks, where we have a few key partners, a fully move focused phone that you can come pre install walls.
You know what makes me genuinely excited about this? Yeah. I had an interview with Jay yesterday or 2 days ago, and later in the interview, I'm not sure. The interview either come out next week or it's already come out.
Yep.
He talks about going after the internet economy. And before we were just talking like, I asked him like, do you think the institutions are coming? And he basically said, yo, fuck the institutions. Like, we have so much to cover.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much real estate out there to like go after. Like, why are we like begging these people to buy their bags when there's like a whole internet economy out there to like make better? And it sounds like the MoveVM is the perfect vehicle, the perfect engine. Yeah. Like you were saying before, to go after the internet economy with like all these apps that you just said, like was it Honey or Henry?
It's Henry, but it's Honey.
So like all these things are clicking with me. Yeah. And it's hard for people to picture this now because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But like once this is out and once these apps are out and they get like real users, and this is how we onboard people into crypto. It's not like them getting bugged by celebrities.
Yeah.
It's them using these applications, getting cash back, like getting like, getting their cash back for this, like Henry and whatnot. This is the way to do it, it sounds like.
And it's also like Move With Friends, which is like...
Move With Friends is
It's so funny. It's like a friend tech social trading platform.
Okay.
And they're doing some work. Essentially, friend tech, but on Ton, on Target Map.
Okay.
Because I think the biggest issue with friend tech was it made a lot of sense, but I had to download the friend tech app. But imagine you could do friend tech in Telegram itself. So if I'm messaging you on Telegram, I can buy your DeFi thing in Telegram itself and sell that to Ansem and sell that to anyone else.
That kind of reminds me of this app. Do you remember? It was like 21co. It was something started by like Balaji, or like Earn.com, where you basically like pay to like message people. You pay Bitcoin. That
but
was like a long
the
time
biggest
ago.
Issue with these apps is A, it's hard to get in the app store.
Yeah.
And then B, it's like distribution. But Telegram is a really good platform where you already have 500 million downloads, whatever.
Yeah.
If you can directly get installed on that, now you have a user base.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was going to ask you, there's all these different chains that are like launching with the pitch, like, hey, like we have like Solana Execution, but with AVM, there's like, what is it, like Monad, there's like Mega Ether that just raised. Yeah. Like, how are you guys like what are your thoughts on all of them? And like, how are you guys like different? Like, is there like enough, do you think there's enough real estate and like enough market to go around?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of fast chains, right?
This has been this pitch has been like happening since fucking EOS.
Yeah.
Back in 2017.
There's this one meme, like, babe, please, one more.
Yeah, just one more.
One more fast chain. I think it's pretty funny. Like, it ultimately depends on, like, most of these things won't work out, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, Solana's probably the only fast chain that's still here today.
That's worked out, yeah.
And it's, like, difficult, right? But it comes down to, like, what is different for the user experience. I think we had, like, 50 ZK EVM L2s. None of them, like, really does people care about. The difference is the user experience doesn't change. If I use Optimism versus ZK EVM versus, like, any other L2, it's functionally the same thing. So I think there's this concept of these next-gen markets coming out. You have Monad, you have Megaeth, you just announced, and then us that are really leading like a fast chains market. But how do you bring that to the Ethereum landscape? Because in the past, it's always been like launch a new chain, but be isolated from Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, Ethereum is what we have today. It's what majority of liquidity mind share users are. So Monad is doing that by essentially launching a layer one, but they're very EVM compatible. They're focused on Ethereum alignment to what degree they are.
Mm-hmm.
We can argue if it's competitive or not.
Yeah.
Megaeth is also doing that as a layer two. I think our unique segment is A, like Move is the crux of our thesis, right? Although the adoption isn't there today, I would say it's like 5% of the market share. I think we have a unique edge in saying like, look, we're still on Ethereum, we're even compatible, but this was a tech built by Facebook. We're not here for like the five users on this DeFi Ponzi. We're here to get my mom to use crypto, to get my family to use crypto, to get your uncle to use crypto that doesn't believe in technology. And for them, it's like, okay, I want security. So if I'm putting money on chain, it better not get hacked. If it gets hacked, I'm never using crypto again.
Yeah.
And then B, it better be low fees. Like I can't use Ethereum right now because it costs me $100 for like transaction. So the combination of those two things is only possible on Move itself, where you have the speed aspect, which everyone is doing, but we also enable security. The issue is that security is not like privacy, where it's not sexy. There's not one privacy coin that's pumped. There's not one security coin that's pumped. So no one like really cares about
There's not an incentive there.
No incentive. Yeah. But if it's part of the business model where it's like, we're also fast, just as fast as you, we're also really secure, that's what gets people excited.
Yeah.
And also you have a community and do that stuff.
And looking at all these different chain launches have come out, like as a founder, like looking at all these different roll-ups that launched, it was like, what is it, like Blast, UK Sync, this and that. It's, you kind of see like then like the valuations go lower and lower and lower. It's just like, and because L2s and roll-ups are not like a unique thing anymore. It's like really easy to launch one, whether it's like with a RAS provider, you build it from the ground up. So like when you look at this, does it make you nervous at all? Like what are your thoughts about all these different ones launching?
I think just like there's no product differentiation.
If
I'm
exactly.
a user, like, I don't know what the difference between like zk-sync, Blast, Optimism is. Like they all are great technologies. There's like hundreds of millions of dollars of important research and development, but there's no user experience difference. If I want to trade my meme coin, the meme coin trading is the same on Blast, on Base, on anything. And then the combination of that with a poor market sentiment, and this whole concept of we're going to raise a lot of money and then not really incentivize the community. That kind of concoction has led to a lot of bad sentiments. I think the first thing that we need to correct that is have fundamentally new products, fundamentally new user experiences. So I think we'll be the first high throughput layer to the market, first mainnet, first testnet. So it'll be the first category creation that we're doing. It's a unique community. We have built up a pretty big community in like Africa and Southeast Asia that we're pretty proud of. And I think this like things like bear chain, where it's like a fundamentally new consensus mechanism, a new DeFi experience. There's new things that can be built that gets people excited.
Yeah, I would say bear chain, I feel like, is an exception there, because there's like really something different going on with proof of liquidity.
Yeah.
That's some like novel consensus from the ground up.
Yeah.
And like what they're trying to do there.
And
speaking of bear chain, like they have such an incredible activation for their testnet. And I think what they did right was with like the NFTs, they basically like got their, got their early user rich. And I think that's like the key is to like make, it's like religion. You make your early believers like, you know, make them happy.
Yeah, it's so, all about wealth creation.
Right? Like, so like what's your plan for wealth creation for like the earliest users?
Yeah, I mean, we're about to roll out our testnet campaign. I think one thing that Blast did really well is that they incentivized early builders. They said like, we're gonna have a large token supply, we can give that to the builders who contribute. So I think they did a good job in that, but they set the expectations too high. So like, they had like 1.5 billion in TVL that was farmed essentially. If I put $50 million into this airdrop, I got $10,000, which from a POI point of view is the best, right? So I think this is blend of like, okay, you want to be give the community airdrop, but you want to do it in Celestia-like style where it's like people are surprised with airdrop, not farming. So for like zk-sync and some of these other L2s, people really farmed it. They spent like 3 years in farming this thing. And when they didn't get the outcome, they weren't happy. Which you can argue is an entitlement. It's not entitlement. That's debatable. But I think the key is to not set up expectations. And we're doing that through this program we're announcing with Parthenon, where we have obviously give builders and a large percent of airdrop to the builders. But there's a way that we'll have a tier system, so you're able to distribute the awards pretty effectively.
Oh, can you get into that a bit? So are you basically like outsourcing the distribution to the projects themselves, and then they decide like, oh, like how we want to reward users? So you're not like directly like going to the user?
Yeah, I mean, we're focusing more on the apps itself, right?
Yeah.
So like we delegate X amount of percentage. We haven't even announced this yet, but we can start talking about it. But idea I had was like, why should it be up to the foundation itself to get the airdrop? Why is it not up to apps? So why does like Because the biggest thing with these layer twos is people were mad at the foundation itself for not incentivizing them properly.
Yeah.
When in reality, the power should go to the apps. The value should accrue to the main apps that are.
And the apps have a better idea of like who the users are.
Like, I don't know, like, if there's a DEX on our chain that people are farming, I don't know who the power users are. The DEX itself is focusing on like, hey, these are top 10 users. They put $50 million TVA in. They better get rich. Yeah. They don't, like, I don't have the information. They do. So one thing we've really explored is how do we give the delegation to the power isn't on us. It's more on these delegates with the top DEX, the top lending protocol, the top stablecoin. They X percent of supply and they distribute it to their users. So like entitlement isn't from the foundation itself. Is you have to build community not only with us but with the app themselves. So A, that takes away, like, we're kind of out of the picture. We just give it up to the builders.
That's really smart.
And then B, like the community itself, they're able to trust that. The community, because you're essentially giving the power of the airdrop to the community itself.
You're getting the same effect.
Yeah.
Like they're going to have to like use the chain, but instead of you directly going to the user and there's an expectation from you, it's like it's the app is deciding. Yeah. And
I'm probably going to write a thread about this after.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
This is, yeah. No, it's like, I think about what was the best airdrop. It was like Uniswap.
Yeah.
And with Uniswap, it had all the ingredients. It was like a surprise. Yeah. You know, the app is, it was around since like 2018, 2019. Yeah. So when people were using it, they weren't expecting an airdrop. They're just using for its inherent usefulness.
Yeah.
And when it like came around, everybody was like, Uniswap Stimmy, let's go. Yeah. Did you get the Uniswap Stimmy?
I think I did, but it wasn't that big. I do a lot.
No, I mean, like, it's funny. I remember I got like one of my friends onboarded during DeFi summer. He's like not even in crypto, but I was trading on Uniswap. And like when he got it, I was just so happy that he got it, because I'm just like, wow, just from like using something, you just got like a few grand.
I think another aspect is like a surprise rule thing is like when I'm like not expecting an airdrop, I get it, I've converted a user, right? Yeah. Like for example, Uniswap, people who weren't Uniswap people got onboarded Uniswap just from the airdrop.
Yeah.
So I think what Celestia did really well is they airdropped to certain people that weren't on like the Celestia narrative. They were airdropped to like Cosmos user builders and Ethereum developers.
They did GitHub, right?
Yeah.
But they're the first ones to do the GitHub thing, right?
Yeah, but then GitHub got like Sybil farmed for spam transactions.
Yeah.
Or people spam commits. But people didn't know that. The criteria wasn't revealed. So I think like the biggest issue here is the points meta, right? Because like people like hate points. And I think like there's two sides of the coin, right? Points are good because you have clear requirements. So you have like, if a user does X, Y, and Z, they'll get these outcomes, which is good transparency. But then that creates a sense of like, okay, I'm going to rack as many points as possible and put my entire blood, sweat, and tears into this thing. I better get rich. So that creates entitlement for people. And if the market's bad, like what it is today, it's GG.
it's not a good recipe. Like points are good. I think points are good for like measuring user activity. But what I don't like about points, it's like, it's not entirely clear to the user like what they convert into.
Yeah.
Like you're going blind. Like what I loved about DeFi Summer was just like, I know it's like getting X amount of tokens and like it was like boom, just straight tokens.
Yeah.
But like with points, it's like, what am I exactly? I feel like it's so easy to be taken advantage of and farmed.
Yeah.
And we saw that over, over, and over again.
And the worst thing is when it's TVL based points.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think now there's not any good examples. Like I think Manta did this, Blast did this. And if I, like, it just doesn't work out, right?
Yeah.
A lot of these whales would put, like, $50 million of their money in.
Mm-hmm.
If you do the math on that, like, the expected APY is, like, $5 million. Like, you can go out and get T-bills for $50 million, and you get $2.5 million in T-bills for, like, a year.
Yeah.
If you can't beat that, if you can't beat Bitcoin, if you can't beat T-bills, if you can't beat Bitcoin, people can be upset. Because it just doesn't make sense from them. Like TVL points, I think makes zero sense, and I think after the recent events, it's not gonna happen again.
Do you see points staying? How do you see like points and like airdrops evolving from here?
I think there's difference of points and on-chain KPIs.
Okay.
So points is the easier way around, where you say you put money in my chain, you build a few apps, you get points. I'll call it a day. That creates entitlement because people are just gonna go all the way to max. Like for Blast, people put $1,500 million in, and it creates entitlement. With on-chain KPIs, it's more of a surprise where you say, like, okay, just contribute to network, contribute to apps, and they themselves reward you. So if I'm a developer in like Shanghai, right now it's really difficult for me to get grants, really difficult for me to like earn like US-based salaries. Or if I'm just contributing to network, I'm like building an app, and I get rewarded for that on-chain. Second thing is like if I'm a farmer, airdrop farmers are fine. They're actually majority of our users today in crypto. That is the PMF today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like both ways. But like in reality, like crypto is really great because if you get a $10,000 airdrop for me and you as US or American people, it's not in the world. But in these regions of the country, like you're changing lives, right?
Yeah.
Which is transformative. So the way we look at it is like we want that to be completely driven by the community. We'll give the supply to the top apps and be like, you guys figure it out. You guys know who your users are. You know how to create incentivize the communities properly. And from a user point of view, you choose which tribes to work with. You choose to work on the DEX that you believe has your interest in mind. If there's like five DEXs, you're going to be the one that you trust the most.
That's
or you nice. Most community, like you have the most connection with.
Yeah.
Versus a chain, I have like 100 products to worry about. I can't possibly know every user on the radar. So that creates a sense of miscommunication.
Yeah. You talked about grants before, and like I think this is a difficult – we see different strategies of how different ecosystems give out grants. I mean, with Optimism, you have retroactive funding. With the Arbitrum DAO, you have like Arbitrum grants and like all the STIP programs and everything. I remember seeing Smokey tweet something about grants, and it's just –
Grants suck.
What? Grants suck. Yeah, TLDR grants suck. So like – What are your thoughts on grants? Like, how do you think you're gonna how else do you think you're gonna incentivize like the ecosystem? Like, how are you gonna use grants in your ecosystem? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
I think I learned because I was built the first DEX in the Move L1s.
Yeah.
And the way they work is you apply for a foundation grant. And it takes around 5 interviews or 5 steps. Mm-hmm. It takes like 2-3 months, and then you might get a $30,000 grant. Cool. Like, what am I gonna do with 30 grand? Even if I can hire one dev and get a smart contract and deploy front end, like, what happens next month? How do I keep the bills on? Again, coming back to wealth creation, you don't create wealth from $30,000. Like for us, for some, as an airdrop, great, but as a business, it doesn't make any sense. So, like we have never given out a grant to date, and we won't plan to do that from cash point of view. I think what's more important is helping teams track one-on-one, giving them the time of day, and being here's the app you're trying to build, here's how to get to market, connect you to the VCs, help you raise, help you get to market, and help them build businesses instead of building like apps for the sake of building apps. Because a lot of these L1s and past L2s, they'll give direct cash grants, but it's very predatory. You'll have these grant farmers that'll go from chain to chain, deploy the same Uniswap V4, V3 fork on 10 different EVM L2s, and call it a day. But there's no actual ecosystem being built. I think Vera and some of the other ecosystems that
build
out
Vera,
is like, how do you make people rich? How do you make an ecosystem rich? How do you make everyone a founder? And you can see that in the ecosystem today. When we announce our ecosystem, like that's how it goes.
So are you going to have like a Build-A-Bear equivalent for Movement?
We don't have a different official brand name. I think we probably will do that.
Yeah.
But we just have like, I directly work one-on-one with founders, me and Ollie, analytical Ollie. We're on like a special ops team, so we'll work on special projects.
You're probably going to come up with some punny name, like Move With Us.
Yeah.
Or like Move Mountains or
Move Incubator or something
Moving,
like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thesis is like, founder time is the most important time where like if you build an ecosystem, your ecosystem projects community want to spend time with you to understand what your needs are and how they can help you scale. And I think what we've done pretty good is like we work directly with our projects, we'll help them scale, and they've raised a lot of capital. It's so much better for them to raise $3 million from other VCs than for me to give you $100,000 grant. Because A, it's taking money from my treasury, and then B, it's like you have 2 months runway, great. What happens the third month? You're gonna drop another chain.
Yeah, then you have to apply for another grant. And the thing with grants is you're spending so much time applying
for the grant
and then like lobbying for it that it distracts away from you building your product.
Yeah.
It's like kind of counterintuitive.
It never made sense to me because you shouldn't have to apply to like a foundation to explain why your product's useful. The market should validate that.
Yeah.
Like if I'm building a social app, like a foundation shouldn't tell me if it's good or bad. The user should. The market should, the VCs should, the funders, the angel investors should, maybe it's community rounds, like node sales, whatever it means. Like the community will value the PMF a product, not the foundation. Grants never made sense.
Yeah. But do you think grants make sense for foundations? Like, you know, like Arbitrum as their STIP program. Go ahead.
I think like, I don't know how I feel about STIP program. I've heard like good and bad things about it. Obviously there's like a few people who are directly, a few teams, apps directly involved that like, kind of give each other grants. So I think like I wish it was more decentralized in terms of power. It is interesting that like teams can vote for here's their incentives and try to drive competition. But what happens is the biggest DEX, for example, will fight for the biggest grant and get the most liquidity. And if you're the fifth DEX on Arbitrum, you're kind of screwed, right? Or you're the eighth DEX on Arbitrum, you're not really getting the love you want.
Like the leaders cement even more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of kingmaking that happens, which in early ecosystems, like Solana kingmaked when it first started off, but they needed to. And now it's like an open market and they're not like directly king-making. Mm-hmm. I think Arbitrum is still in that phase where it feels very king-made. I think Optimism's approach are different, like retroactive grants, like giving artists public goods. I think those deserve grants. Like if you're building an index or API, not really a business model, but you're just doing it for the good of the public,
yeah.
I think it's a great grant. If you're building art, if you're building an NFT collection, good for the public. I think any grants that go towards like public goods that are like not designed for business models, that's grant.
Basically, the grants, like people do stuff not for the profit motive,
for the community.
For the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you do things for the community to help fellow builders, that deserves a grant. But if you're trying to build a company, my grant isn't helping you. It's actually like making it worse because people think you got like your charity money.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like we can go on about this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have a lot of thoughts. I'm just gonna ask, like, when building, like, what keeps you up at night? Like, what if, like, the move language isn't as, like, secure as you thought it was?
Yeah.
Or, like, is there anything that really keeps you up at night?
I think, like, my driving factor is I want to build shit that, like, people actually use.
Yeah.
I there's 500 EVM L2s, there's, like, 1,000 L1s, and most of them have failed because they're the same copy-paste. You have Uniswap on the 50th chain, you have Curve deployment on the 10th chain. Like there's no fundamental user experience difference. And I think we're finally getting to the point where infra is kind of done. Like we've kind of like
we've done it. Yeah.
I think we've built. There's no more one more chain.
Yeah.
I think we had the fast L1s. We had the fast L2s. We've solved all the problems in infra, and the markets. You feel that, right?
Absolutely.
The 30th L2 isn't doing well anymore. Now it's like Ondo that's set $11 billion. Like. Cool, like, way to do on-chain treasuries that they've unlocked. It's Athena that's ripping. So the market and even the funders are now recognizing this. I think from my point of view, it's like, how do I get my friends and family in crypto? Mm-hmm. Whenever I talk to them, they're like, crypto's a scam. I'm going to get hacked. I'm going to get rugged. And they're probably right, honestly. You look at Peck Shield and you look at every day, it's a new hack.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, I really want to build a secure DeFi hub in Ethereum. Like, I want, like, security sexy again. Like, people can trust.
Make security sexy again.
Like, get the tatted on me.
Yeah.
But I want people to trust these systems. People trust AWS. People trust websites.
Yeah.
People don't trust blockchains. They're like, it might get hacked.
Yeah,
might get scared.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's fine. Me and you are used to $50 million hacks. But a 14-year-old girl who puts their bank, like, the life savings in this thing, they're going to, like, it's going to break them, right? Even for institutions, like we all sit here and talk about institutions, they will never come unless if you're getting hacked $5 billion every year. It doesn't make sense. You can't put like a pension fund on chain. That grandma's going to be very upset when it gets hacked.
And I also was going to ask, like, okay, we talked about you guys are really innovating on the execution layer. But something I've really been thinking about is what's going to be like the Google Chrome of crypto, like the UX, UI.
Yep.
Like, there's all these different VMs, but like how's like, it's like hard to access all of them. So do you think about that too? Like, what are your thoughts on like what will be like the consumer, you know, like the consumer interface of crypto?
If I wasn't building on Movement or building Movement, I'd do chain abstraction, which if you look from a bottom up point of view, we had DA, 10 DA layers, they all got funded. You have shared sequencers, they all got funded.
Yeah.
You have execution layers, they all got funded. And now it's like the last piece of infrastructure. There's one more piece, please. But it's chain abstraction.
Yeah.
This essential SDK that lives on top of all the different rollups that connects rollups, L1s, L2s, that connects everything. So if I'm a developer, I simply deploy a smart contract and be like, near deploy dash dash avalanche, near deploy dash dash movement. I think near's really working on SDKs, but that's just an example. I can use one CLI, deploy a smart contract and go everywhere. If I'm a user, I don't have to click from drop-down from Uniswap to Arbitrum to whatever. I just go on my front end, send ETH from Optimism to like send ETH from one app to another app, and there's no chains involved. So I think that's the next major unlock where we have like SDKs. We'll maybe have like abstraction chain, something like that that takes everything away. I think that's coming soon.
Yeah, no, chain abstraction's a big meme as well, and I think that between like that. And I've never thought about the execution layer before in the way you described it because I think I'm so EVM like minded. Like I like came up using the EVM.
Yeah.
I've seen and even before that I used like EOS and like this there's like coded in C++ and this and that.
Yeah.
So like I was even more like in like my head was like forward in the EVM. But once I saw Solana like really take off, I was like, all right, time to like look at other things, like evolve your thesis.
The best example is if you look at Web2, like most websites start off in like Ruby and PHP. That was everyone used, even like Facebook was built in Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, oh, that's they won. Then JavaScript came out, and people were like, oh, it's probably not going to exist. We'll
and
die.
Then React came out.
And then React came out. And then Vue came out. And Angular came out. And then you can build a website in 10 seconds. And that was a major unlock. Like, wow, the speed, the security of this thing, the UX of this thing is 10x out of PHP. And PHP sucks. So the same example is exactly what's going to happen in Web3. I'm going to put my entire life on it. It's like
literally
EVM and the Bitcoin script were great when they started. Like Bitcoin script, first blockchain, basically, right? Mm-hmm. EVM was the first programmable blockchain. But they are limited to those past use cases. If you want to use Uniswap today, use Curve today, great. That'll work. If you want to do a fully on-chain prediction market, a fully on-chain order book, a fully on-chain MMO, it's simply not possible with EVM. Every layer two went down at 100 TPS. Ethereum does not go past a certain amount of throughput. It is now time for these Rust-based next-gen VMs because now you have use cases to demand it. You want Facebook on-chain, use the language that Facebook built.
Yeah, I think that this is a great place to end it. But before we go, we have like a little lightning round where we just like ask questions that are just more lighthearted and stuff. So the first one is, when did you first touch the chain and sex doesn't count?
When did you first touch a chain? What do you mean?
Like, when did you first do an on-chain activity? Like, did you use Uniswap?
Okay.
Did you use like Synthetix?
Oh, okay. When I first tried. Oh, I bought Coinbase. I bought like ETH. I would say like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Did you then like? Did you like use like any apps? Did you use ETH?
No, I just kept it on exchange.
Oh, no, you can't. Sex doesn't count.
Oh, sex doesn't count. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I meant by sex doesn't count.
I think I used like I used Aave. I just like got ETH on a lending protocol.
Yeah.
That was the easiest way for me to deploy.
Yeah. What would be some advice to your younger self?
Well, I'm pretty young.
I know.
If I was even younger, I'd just like start earlier.
Start earlier.
I think Gajesh is like 16. Yeah. He was actually in an apartment like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, who was?
Yeah. Gajesh Meigenlehr.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like 16 or 17 right now. Yeah. And he was like, he like basically dropped out of high school, getting GED or something. And if I could start younger, like, is experiment younger? When I was a kid, I was, like, more focused on, like, Web 2 software.
Yeah.
I was more focused on tech that was already proven, like, building websites, building databases, but wasn't focusing on the cutting edge. So if I bought more ETH or, like, spent more time in early Ethereum ecosystem back then, I would have been a lot more richer than I am today, but also been a lot more early on. But, start earlier.
If you weren't building in crypto, if you weren't even in Web 2, what would you be doing or want to do?
I think I'd be building in VR.
VR,
you know how like the thing that our parents didn't have was internet?
Yeah.
The things that our kids won't have or
will have.
Our kids will have is like, let me repeat this.
Yeah.
The things that our parents had but didn't have internet. We have internet. They were in the libraries and stuff. For us, we have monitors. We have like this recording laptop, there's a TV over there, this iPhone. I believe this future is going to be like VR everywhere. You put on a headset, you can go to work, you can go on Spotify. I think monitors and all those things are in the past, the next 20 years.
Got it. And the last question, who would you recommend as a guest? Who do you want to see on Flywheel?
I want to see someone in the like social and consumer space. Someone like building an app. I think it was like infrastructure fantasy all the love, but now we're the point where app founders. Let's see, who's the best app? Who's the interesting? Let's try getting Racer on this thing.
Racer?
Yeah, basically interesting.
I would love to get Racer on. I don't think he does podcasts though.
Isn't it podcasts?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, there's not many social consumers.
Yeah. Let's
see someone from Tonic System. That's a telegram system.
True.
Who's the founder of Notcoin?
That's a good one. I don't know who the founder.
I talked to him last week. The guy from Notcoin.
Notcoin guy.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. All right. And where can people find you online and learn more about Movement?
At Rushi Mancha on Twitter. I chronically post like 8 to 10 times between sets when I'm working out. Like incline class and tweet, and then at Movement Labs XYZ on Twitter.
You heard it here. Thanks so much for coming on for this special in-person edition of Flywheel.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
See you ETC.
See you ETC.
Anyway.
Thank you, everybody, for watching this episode of Flywheel with Rushi, the co-founder of Movement. Really excited for what he has to come. Like he said, I think this was one interview where you should take your notes. There's definitely several alpha leaks, which was pretty cool. If you want to keep up with everything Flywheel and all the alpha leaks and whatever's coming our way, make sure you go ahead and subscribe, hit that bell button on YouTube. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Give us a like. Make sure to follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, Telegram, at Flywheel DeFi. And you can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22. And we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said in this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.